qubur and qiyad, or following and actually being pulled, allowing yourself to be pulled by Islam is very important. Because as we know, if this religion has any similitude, it's the similitude of a slave. The Christians have the similitude of a father-son. And this is what they got mixed up upon. This is what led them astray. Because they took this idea of, O Father who art in heaven, and the idea that God blessed his son Israel, and so on and so forth. And they had this idea of father-son relationship. This is the relationship which led them astray, because they misunderstood it and took it in a literal sense, when it was only meant to be a figurative sense. Whereas in our religion, walillah alhamd, may Allah be praised, the similitude we have is of slavery. And this is the truth in every manner. It's a literal sense. It's also a figurative sense. Because we are the slave of Allah. And the slave, what does a slave do? The slave obeys. The slave, if he is told to move this way or that way, he obediently follows that which is said. So when the ulama mentioned this idea of inqiyad, that he is allowed to be led, he allows himself to be led, this is very, very crucial. So I wanted to just mention a couple of the narrations of the Prophet ﷺ in this manner. The idea of qabool first. There's a hadith which the Prophet said, مثل ما بعثنا الله به من الحدو والعلم كمثل غيث كثير أصاب أرضا فكان منها نقية قبلة الماء وانبتت كلاء والعشب كثير وكانت منها أهادب أمسكت الماء ونفع الله بها أجارب أمسك الماء ونفع الله بها الناس فشربوا وزرعوا وأصابت منها طائفة أخرى إنما هي كيعان لا تمسك الماء ولا تنبت الكلاء فذلك مثل من فقه في دين الله ونفع ما بعثنا له به وعلم ومثل من لم يرفع بذلك رأسا ولم يقبل هدي الله الذي أرسلت به. This is a very important hadith in Bukhari and Muslim, where it says that the example of me and that which I have been sent with the guidance and the knowledge is the guidance of rainfall falling, and some of it hit the land, which it held the water, and from that water it accepted the moisture, and from it grew a lot of the grass, and it benefited the people. And there was another part of the land where it was a hard thing which kept the water and allowed the animals to come and drink from that water, because it held the water. It was like a retainer or a vessel. And there was another part of the land which it did not allow the grass to grow, nor did it hold the water, but it just drained off. And this is the example of those who understand the religion and take benefit of the religion. And they have knowledge of the religion, and then they teach about the religion. And the example of those who did not did not lift their head to it, nor did they accept that which I have been sent of the guidance. لم يقبل. The idea of قبول. It has the loves of the idea, or the actual word of the idea of قبول. And somebody can actually have the knowledge and actually remember it. He doesn't forget it. And actually he can actually make a testimony, but he doesn't really accept. The idea of accepting that which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says. You actually accept it in your heart, and you accept it in your actions. This is very important, because it may be like the Jews, and they understand that which the Prophet has been sent, and they accept and they understand that he is the Prophet, but they have not really accepted him as a Prophet, nor do they accept that which he has been sent with. They have certain things in their heart which make them disagree and not accept. There's another hadith which gives the idea of al-inqiyad, or the idea of allowing someone to be led, where the Prophet ﷺ says, it's a famous hadith, it's a narration where the Prophet said that he gave a speech, and when the people heard this speech, they became very moved by the speech, and they said, O Prophet of Allah, is this as if this speech is the last speech that you're giving? So give us the last advice of the life, or give us a very important advice. And so the Prophet said, لَقَدْ تَرَكْتُكُمْ عَلَى الْبَيْضَاءِ ليلها كنهارها لا يزيغ عنها بعد إلى هالك. ومن يعيش منكم فسيرى اختلافا كثيرا. فعليكم بما عرفتم من سنتي وسنة الخلفاء الراشدين من بعدي، وعليكم بالطاعة. وإن عبدا حبشيا أدوا عليها بالنواجد، فإنما المؤمن كالجمل الأنف حيثما انقاد حيثما انقيد انقاد، excuse me. Which means that verily I have left you and something on the clear path, which is like a white path. It is very clear that no one can misunderstand or be misguided about this, because it's so clear. It's so crystal clear that the only people who can go astray are the ones who are destined to go astray. And that if those of you who live after me, you will see differences of opinion. But what you do is that you take that which you know to be of the way of me and the way of the Khulafa al-Rashideen, or the rightly guided Khulafa after me. You take that which you know, bima araftum, that which you know. And then also be obedient. Even if the person who is ordered to be above you is a slave from Habasha. And hold on to this with your molar teeth, which of course are the strongest teeth. And verily, the example of a believer is the example of a camel who has been tied by his nose. Wherever he is pulled, he allows himself to be pulled by that. And this hadith is declared in a sahih by Sheikh Albani, related in Hakim. So the idea is that Prophet ﷺ is giving the example of someone who is a believer is like this camel who has, as you know, they put the rope between his nose. When you have the rope and your nose, it means that you do not know left or right according to your own whims. You only know that which your master is pointing you to. Where he pulls you this way, you go this way. You pull you that way, and you go that way. And this is the idea of this slavery. A person who is a slave of Allah, he has the idea of a worship. I mean, when we say ya'bud, the idea of ibadah, it has both the idea of the worship, which is the making the prayer and so on and so forth, and it also has the idea of the slavery, the being having a master over you in which you obey. Just like that camel, it has a master, and that master makes him to go as he wishes to go. The famous hadith where the Prophet says that كل أمتي يدخل الجنة إلا من أبا. قال ومن يأبى يا رسول الله. قال من أعطاني دخل الجنة ومن عصاني فقد أبى. Which means that all my nation is going to go into the paradise except that which disobeys or that which refuses. And so they ask, well, and who could refuse, O Prophet of Allah? Who is someone who is going to refuse, who is going to deny? And so he says, whoever obeys me, then he is the one who is going into Jannah. And whoever disobeys me, he is the one who is going into the hellfire. Or he is the one who is denied, or he is rejected. And the idea that every one of these conditions, the idea of qabool or acceptance, it has as its negative aspect, or the opposite, is someone who rejects, someone who does not accept. This is also, the Prophet has mentioned this in relation to another hadith where he says that كلكم يدخل الجنة إلى من شرد على الله شراد البعير عن أهله. which means that all of you are going to go into the paradise except for the ones who run away from Allah just the way the camel runs away from its master. If anyone knows the nature of a camel, it's a very rough animal. I mean, you have to be really tough with it in order to get it to be submissive. Once it's submissive, then inshallah, it's a very good animal. But often it can be very rough. And once it goes and it goes wild, it just runs away. And they cannot control it in any way. Sometimes they even have to shoot that animal because it becomes dangerous. And so this is what the Prophet is saying, is that all of you are going to go into the Jannah except the ones who run away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, just the way the camel runs away from its masters. In another hadith, the Prophet says that the believers are the ones who are soft and the ones that can be easily led, just the way the camel who has the rope in its nose, it can be pulled left and right, and it can be laid to sit down. Again, this is the same idea which the Prophet is reinforcing over and over again, that a believer is that one who accepts and allows himself to be a slave. People in America, they don't have this. We have this idea of being a slave. No, I'm a free person. It's a free country. Their nature is against having the idea that, no, you are a slave and you have a master who orders you. And this also is the idea that in the Islamic world, the idea of obedience. As we know, even the children here in America, their nature is to disobey their parents, because this is what they taught. This is what is reinforced in the school system, on the streets, on television, anywhere else. Where in Islamic society, and it's the idea is that taught from the very beginning, is that no, your obedience is the thing that you're taught. That you're not supposed to do just as your whim has, but that which you have been ordered. And that order is a command that's coming not from any kind of illegitimate source, but it's coming from a legitimate source, which is that which wants the best for you, and which is trying to bring to you the success. There's the saying where the Prophet ﷺ when he first started to give the da'wah, he used to go to the various marketplaces, and he used to say to the people to the Arabs, that say this word, La ilaha illallah, tuflihu. Qul la ilaha illallah, tuflihu. That if you say these words, you will be successful. Of course, when he said that you will say these words, he was saying these words in the manner in which I had mentioned, with the knowledge of it, and with the truthfulness about it, without doubt, and with accepting that which it entails. And the accepting in that which it entails is, I said, the obedience and the submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I want to talk about this word tawheed. A brother had asked me when we were sitting here about the hadith where there's a couple of hadiths actually. One of them was when the Prophet ﷺ sent Mu'adh, and he sent Mu'adh to Yemen. And he was going to go to the people of the Ahl al-Kitab, the people of the Jews and the Christians. And so he said, the Prophet said to him that, verily, you are going to go to the people of the Ahl al-Kitab, and so let it be that the first thing that you teach them is Ash-Shahada in La ilaha illallah. In another narration it says, and yuwahhad Allah, that you will do tawheed. In another narration it says, and ya'bud Allah, and to worship Allah alone. In another narration it says, al-iman billah, will be the first thing that you order them as al-iman billah. So these four things, iman billah, ibadat Allah, yuwahhad Allah, tawheed Allah, and ash-shahada, they all have the same basic idea. They all revolve around the same realities. The idea of tawheed. Some people in the Muslim world, they say this tawheed. How come we never see this tawheed where's tawheed in the Quran? You know, the people who want to see everything in the Quran say, where's the tawheed in the Quran? Give me the tawheed out of the Quran. This tawheed that you're talking about, I don't want to hear it because we don't find it in the Quran. Similar to what we say actually to these Christians when we say about Trinity, that the word Trinity is not in the Bible. This is a fabrication by Paul. And some people have tried to say, especially when you talk about Tawheed and you talk about Shahada and you talk about worshipping Allah and not worshipping anyone else, and you try to explain what the meaning of Shirk is, you try to explain that many of the common practices that some of the Muslims do is actually a form of Shirk. And they say, no, we don't want to talk about this. Talk about, points of fiqh that we know, talk about salat, talk about zakat, talk about tahara, but we don't want to hear about this. There's nothing about this tawheed. Well, actually, this tawheed is in many hadiths. It's also, anyone who knows about tawheed, they know that the word wahadu yuwahadu tawheedin, it's in the Quran in the sense that ya'budu Allah wahadahu, and kulu Allahu ahad, Allahu ahad, one. And Allah also is wahad al-qahhar. So Allah is one, and the one is very very easy to understand. But as I said, the tawheed that is mentioned, it has the negative aspect and the positive aspect. And this is the, as I mentioned, the two pillars of the Tawheed. That someone cannot understand the unity of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala without denying the worship of those that are worshipped other than Allah, and then affirming the worship of Allah only. There are two aspects. There's a very important hadith which is mentioned in Sahih Muslim, in the chapter which mentions about the one of the Sahabi whose name was Amr ibn Abatha, when he accepted Islam. And this hadith, it says that he used to believe that everyone was wrong. He was in his land, which was outside of Medina, and he heard that there was a man in Medina, and he was calling to a new religion, or he's calling to a new something. So he says actually that he lived and he knew that people, something was wrong. The people were ala dalala, they were on wrong. And then he heard that there was a person in Mecca who was giving a certain news. And so he rode on his horse, he rode on his beast, actually a camel, and he came into the Prophet ﷺ. And then he says, "Ma anta?" Who are you? He says, "Ana nabi." And he says, "What is a nabi?" "Ma nabi?" "Qala arsalani Allah." "Allah has sent me." And he says, "Bima arsalaka?" And what did he send you with? And so his answer is very, very important. He said, "Bisilat al-arham wa kasr al-asnam wa an yuwahhid Allah la yushrik bihi shay'a." Which means that he has sent me with tying of the ties of the family and breaking of the idols. Kasr al-asnam. Wa an yuwahhid Allah. And yuwahhid Allah. And to make Allah one. And that not to associate any partners with him in worship. This small sentence, and this was the man, then he says that, okay, he says, "I'm going to follow you. I want to follow you, O Prophet of Allah." So he says that, "You can't follow me nowadays. Don't you see what the people of the Quraysh are doing to me? Don't you see what's happening to me?" And in that day, there was only at the time that the Prophet was with Abu Bakr and with Bilal, radiallahu anhum, and a few others of the people that believed with him. And so then he said to that, "Go back to your people. And then if you hear that I have become dominant, then come back to me. وَإِذَا سَمِيْتَ أَنِّي ظَهَرْتُ Then come back to me." This hadith is very crucial. And I was always very surprised that we have certain books about Tawheed, like the book of Muhammad al-Wahhab, which is the Kitab al-Tawheed. He didn't mention this hadith in the book of Tawheed. And other books, I never read it in those books. And I found it in some of the, in Sahih Muslim, but the explanation I found in some other letters that were written by some of the ulama. But one of the crucial points that I want to mention about this hadith is the Prophet ﷺ is telling Amr ibn Abasa, who's in the very new time of Islam, when Islam is very, very weak, he's telling you that, "What have I been sent with? To gather the family ties and to break the idols. And to worship Allah, to make Allah one." Meaning make Allah, of course, in belief and in practice. And to not do any kind of associating partners. Was the Prophet ﷺ able to break the idols at that time? Did he go out and break the idols? Of course he couldn't, he was in Mecca. So it wasn't that the Prophet ﷺ couldn't break those idols, or he was breaking the idols. But nevertheless, he's telling Amr ibn Abasa, he's telling him that I've been sent with this mission. This is the mission that I've been sent with. And this mission, of course, is going to find a fulfillment. And it did find its fulfillment. But that was only after the Prophet ﷺ left the environment of Mecca. He found a group of Muslims who actually became the backbone of the Islamic army. And they actually protected themselves against any aggression and built an Islamic society, an Islamic so-called government. And then actually went back and reconquered Mecca. And then at that time, cleansed the Kaaba and the Haram of Allah, the place where Abraham had built with Ismail, cleansed it of all the false idols that were there. Of course, what he was meaning that this person, Amr ibn Abasa, you yourself, you break any idols that you have within your control. And that's why it was very important that the Prophet ﷺ says that, go back with the knowledge of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the worship of Allah. And when you hear that I have conquered, when I have become dominant, either zahartu, then you come back to me. This gives the very clear idea that one has to stay away from all forms of idol worship. Of course, at the time of the Quraysh, the idol worship was the most dominant thing. But if someone says this word, La ilaha illallah, and let's say he's a Christian, he doesn't worship idols. He doesn't have any idols. But does that mean he doesn't have false worship? Of course, we know that he does have false worship. The Prophet said this according to this man who was of the Arabs. And the people around him, their form of misworship, the form of the thing which must be negated in order to become a Muslim. As I said, there's two pillars of in Islam, in the Tawheed. The negation of worshipping other than Allah, you must negate that and believe that it has no worthiness of being worshipped because it has no power to be a god. It does not create, it does not sustain, it cannot give life or death. And then after that you have to worship Allah in the forms of worship that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made, has legislated to worship in prayer, in zakat, and so on and so forth. But if someone was like a Christian, like Eid ibn Hatim, when he came to the Prophet and he was wearing the cross, and the Prophet said to him, "Throw away, Ya Eid," he said, "what is this cross that is around your neck?" And then at the same time, he was reading the verse that which said that, "أَتَخَذَ أَحْبَارَهُمْ وَرَحْبَانَهُمْ أَرْبَابًا مِنْ دُونَ اللَّهِ وَمَا أُمِرَ إِلَّا أَنْ يَعْبُدُوا وَإِسَى بْنَ مَرْيَمَ excuse me وَمَا أُمِرَ إِلَّا أَنْ يَعْبُدُوا إِلَهًا وَاحِدًا." That they have taken their scholars, al-ahbar, and their ruhban, which are monks, they have taken them to be lords other than Allah and Jesus Christ, and they were only ordered to worship one God. So Eidi at this time, and then Eidi said to the Prophet ﷺ, and this is a very important hadith in the sense that it explains a lot about the reality of the worship other than Allah, other than pagan idol worship. Eidi said, "O Prophet of Allah, we do not worship our scholars, and we do not worship our monks." And the Prophet answered him in a very crucial answer. He said that, "Is it not the reality that they legislate what is lawful, and they make the lawful to be unlawful, and they legislate and they make the unlawful to be lawful, and then you follow them?" He said, "Yes, we do that." He says, "And that is their worship of them. That is the form of them making them arbab min dunallah, to make them to be lords other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala." The idea of Amr bin Abasa and the idea of them worshipping the forms, the idols, that's one form of worship that was prevalent among the Arabs. But this other hadith of Eid ibn Hatim, it gives the idea that people can worship other than just idols, and that can be the worship of man. And this is one of the most important types of worship that people worship. Especially, and you look at nowadays, that you do not find many people who are the Muslims, especially upon people who would be, he considers himself a Muslim, he would go and worship, for instance, an idol. He would not do that. He would say that, no, an idol is not worthy of worship. This is for Hindus. This is for Buddhists. And yet, they may follow someone who legislates that which is other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has legislated. And they follow them in that legislation. And they make them into a lord. Because the quality of a Rabb is that he gives sustenance. He gives life and death. He creates. And he also legislates. He gives the law. He gives the form of how to worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And if someone follows that other form than that which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has legislated, then he's making them into a lord. There's certain other hadiths which talk about the idea of wahada. In one of the hadiths it says on Abi Malik, which says, سمعت النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول من وحد الله وكفر بما يعمل من دون الله حرم ماله ودمه فحسابه على الله. Which means that whoever makes Allah one and he rejects that which is worshipped other than Allah, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made it his blood and his money to be sacred, and that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will take care of his affairs, will account for him, will account for his deeds. And if he gives him the hisab or the accounting or the judgment, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will do that. The idea here, of course, again, we have the idea of the negative and the affirmative. The kafara, that they deny and they reject that which is worshipped other than Allah, and they do and they worship only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, wahad Allah. And the word wahad Allah, as I said, it includes both the two pillars of the tawheed, which is the negation and the affirmation. The negating of that which is worshipped other than Allah, and the affirmation to worship only Allah. As I said, the hadith of Mu'az bin Jabal is a very important hadith, because it says that the first thing that you tell them is to worship Allah, or to do the tawheed. As the hadith says, that لَمَّا بَعَثَ نَبِي صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ مُعَاذٍ إِلَى يَمَنْ قَالَ إِنَّكَ تَقَدَّمْ عَلَى قَوْمٍ مِنْ أَحْلِ الْكِتَابِ فَلْيَكُنْ أَوَّلْ مَا تَدْعُوهُمْ عَلَيْهِ أَنْ يُوَحَّدَ اللَّهُ. Where he said that verily you are going to the people of the book, and let the first thing that you call them to is the worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. فَإِنْهُمْ عَرَفُوا ذَلَكَ. In one narration, and if they know that, and in another narration it says وَإِنْهُمْ أَطَاعُوكَ. If they obey you, the first thing is this, that they know it, they only know it, but they don't obey you. Of course, that is not the understanding which is meant. But if they actually obey you in the fact that they are not going to worship anything other than Allah, and they're going to worship Allah. Once they do that, then it says, then let them know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made it incumbent upon them to worship Allah with five prayers during the night and day. And then if they obey you in that, then let them give the poor due, the zakat, and it's taken from the rich of them and given to the poor of them, and then be scared of the curse or of the dawah, of the supplication of that person who is madloom, who has oppression done upon him, because verily there is no cover between that and Allah. Meaning that even a person of the Ahlul Kitab, if he raises a grievance against an unjust person, then verily his supplication will go up to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And he was warning Mu'adh against the supplication of someone who has had any oppression done to him. The point that I wanted to mention is, just like in the hadith of Amr bin Abasa, he came to the Prophet and he asked him, what have you been sent with? He said that I have been sent with the joining of the ties, and been sent with the fact of yuwahid Allah, of breaking the asnam and destroying all idols, and to make Allah one. He did not tell him about salat and that sitting. He did not tell him about making the salat. He told him to go back, and when you've heard that I have become dominant, then you come back to me. And when he did come back to him, of course, the hadith is a very long hadith, and it's in the chapter talking about the times of the salat. He explained to Amr bin Abbas the times of the salat and about the salat, because at that point this is what he needed. The point to remember is that Amr bin Abbas, for all those years, he was a Muslim, but he was a Muslim and he was upon the tawheed. He was upon the idea that there is no one to be worshipped except for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and he was worshipping him with that which he knew how he should worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is why we say, and we always say, that it doesn't matter how much someone prays to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He can pray 50 times a day, but if he's also doing shirk at the same time when he's making the prayer, then he's not fulfilled the condition of the tawheed. That's why it's very important for someone to understand that what it means when it says that you will make Allah one in your belief and in your worship, and you will not practice any forms of shirk, which is the association of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in worship or in belief.